Hello, everyone. This is Greg, your host of Goddamn GameCube, and this is Season 4. Follow Goddamn GameCube on social for updates on the show, and subscribe to us on YouTube for bonus video content. Thank you, and enjoy today's episode. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Goddamn GameCube. Greg and Riley are your hosts today, and we are talking about Dead Space. This game fucking rules, and I'm so excited that we're going to be breaking down this franchise. So, Riley, let's not waste any time. Let's get right after it. Go ahead.
Let's dig in here. All right, so Dead Space. We're going to be talking about all three games, mostly the first one. A survival horror series created by Glenn Schofield and Michael Condrey. I've watched a good deal of interviews with this guy, Glenn. He seems like a very interesting guy. Began as an illustrator and became an art director on some early Game Boy games. I believe the Barbie game was his first job.
He's come a long way.
He said, "I learned everything there was to learn about Barbie, and we knocked it out of the park." and I just, you know, even if Barbie was not his topic of interest, apparently he killed it, and I like that about a guy where you do the best you can with what you got. Mm-hmm. So this game, Dead Space, was developed by EA Redwood Shores, which became Visceral Games, published and owned by EA. The basic premise here: in the future, humanity believes its resource crises are solved after digging up an inscrutable alien artifact that appears to produce limitless energy. Big no-no. You never trust that shit.
Nope, bad.
In reality, this artifact called the Marker induces paranoia, hallucinations, and devotion in its nearby observers, and causes the dead to reanimate into gruesome creatures called necromorphs. So we are going to get into the first game, very, very popular, very well received. Did you play this when it came out?
Yep. This was a day one purchase for me.
Wow.
Back in high school. All I remember about wanting to play this was it looks like Resident Evil 4 in space, so I'm all in.
That was, I believe, the plan. They were very inspired by Resident Evil 4. Pitched it as kind of Resident Evil 4 in space. I played it a couple years later, but I did see my friend play it at his house. And for me, I think it was just like there were so many games coming out back then that I just missed it. But I'm so glad I went back and followed up with it.
Well, I consider this to be one of those like golden era Xbox 360 games, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, like it was on everything, but when you think back to like 06 to 2010, I spent so much time in high school playing Xbox games, and this was one of them.
Yeah. But
this is actually one of the few games I 100%ed, like did it on every difficulty. I was very into this game.
Nice. So this, it follows engineer Isaac Clarke as he boards and explores the USG Ishimura, which is a planet cracker mining ship that was conducting an illegal operation on Aegis 7, a planet kind of in the far reaches of space. Isaac is looking for his girlfriend, Nicole Brennan, who is serving as the Ishimura's chief medical officer, and she periodically contacts you through the course of the game. So, Greg, I want to ask you how you feel about this opening premise and this universe in general. What do you find compelling about it?
Okay, so I think the I think the opening is very effective, but it also kind of depends what background you have too.
Sure.
Because if we're talking when this thing came out, 2009. Or so?
2008.
So in 2008, I knew nothing about the Alien franchise. Like, I didn't know anything about space horror. I wasn't familiar with The Thing or, you know, anything like that back then.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, this game was very fresh as high school Greg.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, shit pops off within 10 minutes.
Right.
So, I mean, they really... I think we'll talk about this. The big part about this game is how gruesome it is and how... what's the word for this? How everything in the game is diegetic, and that's what jumped out to me about the setting. It is a sci-fi game, but you're in it and immersed in it. There are no like cutscenes and things like that.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I feel the same way. In terms of sort of the structure, you mentioned it kind of pops off in 10 minutes. They were talking about how like a horror movie, like the ones you mentioned, they're over in 90 minutes, 2 hours,
mm-hmm.
whereas a game, it's less clear, and you are the one who has to make progress. has to finish it. Like, you know, horror movie, you can just like close your eyes, shut your ears, and it's over.
Yep.
But with a game, you gotta get through it.
Yep.
So this game received near universal acclaim for its atmosphere. I felt that consistent tension was held the entire time throughout the Ishimura's very claustrophobic and dimly lit environments. In their words, also, it's like comedy. You can't keep reusing gags. It only really works well the one time, and you got to keep changing it up.
Yeah.
And I thought they did that very well.
Like, what I read about this was they, throughout development, they were thinning out and cutting jump scares.
That's, yep.
What's so funny is, like, this game to me is one of the ultimate jump scare games because of just how intense and, like, I'm scared and, like, on the edge of my seat the entire time.
Yes, for sure. And it kind of serves as a funny little contrast with what we were talking about with Resident Evil 8, how they're like, we want to smooth it out over time, make it more consistent.
We're talking about two different eras of games, man.
Well, yeah, yes, of course. But I mean, I think in terms of making something that is consistently scary over the course of a, you know, 8-10 hour experience, this is definitely sort of a pioneer in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
As they say, we wanted to give you some moments of relief, but not too many. So
this
cool.
game is almost, dude, I feel like my ass is like glued to the seat almost the entire time.
Yeah, you
game,
definitely want to be playing it at night with the lights off and just kind of like, ugh.
I mean, like, there are not very many moments of levity, if any at all.
Right.
Yeah, not really.
So similar, I mean, you were talking the era, the score by Jason Graves was intended to evoke the aleatoric style where mistakes are okay, kind of similar to the BioShock design we talked about, inspired by the Shining score and modern experimental orchestra music. And it was, believe it or not, recorded at Skywalker Sound, which is George Lucas's little ranch there.
Wow.
So pretty profesh.
Okay.
So moving on, very solid voice acting across the board, I would say, but very notable that Isaac is a silent protagonist in this one, for the most part.
Yeah, what I find, I'm trying to think, do I know any horror games where the protagonist doesn't say anything?
Well, not so much horror, but they were inspired by Gordon Freeman.
Sure.
From Half-Life, and they mentioned that they struggled with this because it's like, so if he isn't saying anything, does it feel like he has enough agency? Where is he just taking orders from the other characters?
Right. I mean, what I find fascinating about this, and I'm sure we'll dig in, like, he is a silent protagonist, but the grunts and screams from him are amazing.
Oh, yeah.
But they do a really good job of, like, the reason why I brought up, do I know any silent protagonist horror games? Because in every other horror game I'm thinking of, the character is in some situation, they have relationships with characters, and I'm trying to think of 3D action games in recent memory where you don't say anything. There aren't very many.
No, I mean, maybe, I think, what's his name? Ethan would have benefited from being a silent protagonist, but who knows? Many BioShock-esque audio logs are found over the course of the game as well,
mm-hmm.
that explain pretty much every detail of what happened prior to your arrival. The sound design, as you mentioned, it was a team led by Don Vecca, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, is the most memorable aspect for me. The team watched their favorite horror movies and tried to replicate the sound philosophy as closely as they could. They're talking about how horror movies, like, if you mute them, they're not as scary.
Yeah,
it's
of
like,
course.
And it's, they felt that closing your eyes and listening to the sounds is scarier than watching a horror movie on mute. So the sound was very much an important aspect.
Also, I think, and before you continue, I think the sound design of this game is one of the most, like, understated and, like, I hate using the word underrated, but I think it is in this game in particular. I don't know if it got much acclaim at all for sound design. It really should.
I think it definitely should. I was going to go through some of my favorite things. The setting in particular, the Ishimura, is where you spend most of the game, and you hear a lot of this horrible, like, grinding machinery and stuff as it's, you know, because it's kind of a derelict and it's falling apart as you explore it. And there's this incredible, they talk about this room where they used like the BART, the San Francisco transit system.
Yeah.
Like they record the train because it's like very screechy and they just have it in the background. Very scary. The monster noises are terrifying.
Yes.
Because it's one of those things where they have like a little bit of like animal noises and human noises kind of mixed in together.
There's a lot of yelling in this game. Oof. Yeah.
Meant not only to induce fear, but also give you some non-visual cues when enemies are attacking or about to attack.
Yep.
I liked also the near total sound dropout during the zero G sequences.
Yes. And everything is muted and you kind of feel suffocated and vacuumed when you're doing it.
Yeah. It's like a different kind of scary.
Yep.
And of course, as we mentioned, Isaac's shouting and stomping. And I like how it sounds when it's kind of filtered through the rig's voice box. You know, it's very a little sci-fi punch there.
I mean, I remember like just recalling one of my favorite things to do in Dead Space was just to hit an enemy with my fist or stomp on them just to hear him just like gutturally. I don't know who this voice actor was, but his performance was unbelievable.
Yes. Yeah. It's very, very profoundly good. In terms of Isaac himself, I thought it was notable that you see his face at the end, but you can also see it in the beginning. It's one of the first things I did. Because you can spin the camera around when you're on the ship with the other people. Yep. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's what he looks like. Yeah, it was kind of interesting. But it doesn't prompt you to do it. It's just like if you have the imagination to do it. Isaac very notably can get completely dismembered in multiple ways. It is very visceral, if pardon the pun here.
Yep.
I think the rig itself is iconic at this point. You know, I love that kind of bronze armor with the teal highlights everywhere. I haven't seen anyone that uses that kind of color palette. And as you mentioned, a pause-free diegetic UI that keeps you in the moment and kind of keeps you in the tense atmosphere without going into a pause menu.
And I think that's one of the first things when we have to go back to what, 08, 09?
Yeah.
I remember that part of the presentation was incredibly impactful to me back then.
Right.
I don't think I had ever seen that at that point in my gaming history.
Right.
Where your life meter is displayed on your back.
On
your spine. And your inventory is a hologram that displays and you cannot pause the game.
Right.
And the word is diegetic. What that means is all of these things are happening in universe.
Right.
And it's just an unbelievably good idea in a horror game to not have a HUD. Mm-hmm. It's such a good idea.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
De-gamifying it a little bit.
Yeah, like if you go back to the original Resident Evils, there's no ammo counter on the screen. Your health is not on the screen. You have to find some way to look at it.
Yeah.
And this game almost puts those together by having your health status be in-universe because it's displayed on your back.
And so also your ammo is projected from the guns.
It's a hologram on the gun, right?
Yes. Your air and energy readouts are like on your shoulder. So it's
awesome.
All
the presentation in this game. Do you think it's one of the best presentations we've talked about on the show?
Oh, for sure.
It's got to be one of them.
And it's watching this guy Glenn talk about it. It's like, this is what happens when you give a shit. You know what I mean? Like, I think that is the crux of this whole thing, is that he really cared.
And can you believe this was an EA game? Right?
I can't.
No, I can't either.
So in talking about its peers and other games that didn't do it as well, I wanted to ask you, what do you think other games, particularly horror games, but I guess games in general, can learn from their approach?
Sure. I'm a very big proponent of taking HUD off the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's portrayed on your... like Isaac Clarke, all of the information is on his back, on your character.
Yeah.
In Resident Evil, you have to go to the pause screen to look at the EKG.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. What I really... I don't know what it is. I think the word you used is de-gamify.
Yeah.
Or like, I don't want to be... We must have talked about this perhaps in the first season, where I don't want to be reminded that I'm playing a video game, especially in a horror game.
Right.
I don't want to know.
Well, I was thinking about how I was watching you play a game, which we will talk about in another episode, last night, and I was taken out of it because you were kind of in a tense or emotional moment, and like a little like challenge thing appeared, like for it, like an achievement or something in the corner, or like a internal game math thing. And I'm like, you know, it's like, I get why it's there, but I wish it wasn't, you know, that kind
of
thing.
Yeah. 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 100%. So I feel now, I believe, you could correct me, I believe the navigation system in Dead Space is you have to click a button and Isaac will display a light on the ground.
Yes.
I think.
They did a cute little video where they had it in their offices, where the little line on the floor.
So, like, they even did that well, where, like, there's no compass on the screen. There's no, like, quest and objective markers on the screen.
Yeah.
If you want to set down a little light to help you, to guide you, he has to do it.
Right. Exactly.
Please, thank you, more of that.
So let's do that.
Yep.
In terms of moment to moment here, we're going to get into strategic dismemberment, which I feel sets it apart from other third-person shooters. We got a little punchy before we hit record here. We started talking about the necromorphs, how you can cut them up, and then we're going to grill them up and make some necro burgers.
It's the 4th of July. So we're going to make some necro burgers and some morph dogs.
And I mean, they should have done that in Universe, but yeah. It is very unique where these enemies are dead, so, you know, unlike normal zombies, like, the headshot's not going to work on them. You have to literally, like, tear them apart.
And what's amazing, I think, about this game was they structured the weapons to reflect that.
Yes.
Right? Where
so you have the plasma cutter, which is the main kind of weapon in this series, where you can change its axis to
so
shoot, like, horizontal or vertical.
You can shoot, and it's essentially, what I love about the weapons in this game, too, they are all engineering-based. Like, Isaac Clarke is not a soldier. He's actually an engineer. So, you know, the plasma cutter is, like, used to cut metal, but you're shooting it to cut up monsters. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of that stuff is there. I was going to go through the ones they have there. So the Ripper is another one where you shoot, like, the razor blades.
Yeah, it's just this buzz saw that comes out, right?
Yeah, it's like, so cool. You know, your typical flamethrower, the contact beam. It's all, like, engineering kind of adjacent stuff. I think the pulse rifle is, like, the only one that was, like, weapon.
It's the only, like, gun in the game.
Yes.
And if you don't mind, I have one anecdote about Dead Space. It has to do with the pulse rifle.
Oh, sure.
It's hard for me to sort of, like, get everyone into my brain space when I'm playing a horror game.
Yeah.
But I'm so locked in, and I remember, I was just in this one hallway, and I had the pulse rifle out, and then, you know, Necromorph just comes out of a grate, and I just remember just, like, screaming in my basement, like, ah, and I'm just unloading the pulse rifle, and I'm like, when a game actually gets me yelling and screaming and yelling at the screen, I'm like, this game rocks.
You're engaged.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to also mention one of my other favorites was the line gun,
which
is like the mine kind of thing. And that's also another, like, it's used for mining, you know, like, it's pretty cool. I think in Dead Space 1, I only, upgraded the plasma cutter. In the other games, I messed around with the other weapons, but the plasma cutter is so, like, useful in so many different situations. So you can upgrade your weapons and the rig through these things you find called nodes.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also use those to open up some caches that you find along the way. So there's a little bit of decision making.
So, like, cool upgrade system in this game, right? Where you have these, like, pseudo rare tokens you can either upgrade your armor with, or should you risk it and open a door with them.
Right.
Pretty cool. I think in my first run, I did plasma cutter and assault rifle only.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I did the rig and the plasma cutter for the most part. Isaac also has a kinesis module, which is a, you know, you can move heavy objects around, which is also used in Universe as an engineering thing, where they're moving around heavy machinery and, you know, supplies and whatnot, as well as the stasis module, which can temporarily slow time. And that is used to work on parts of the ship where they need to slow down, you know, fast moving stuff.
The last thing about the rig that I love is when you upgrade your defense of your rig, your armor actually looks different.
Yes.
Like,
over
it
the course
actually,
of the game.
It actually puts more metal on your chest and back.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this game rules.
More games should do that.
It's awesome. Like, I love when, like, I'm given a mathematical bonus, it's then reflected on what it looks like.
Right.
It's awesome.
Yeah, totally. So in addition to that, so I wanted to just clarify that those, the kinesis and the stasis are also used. So they're used in combat and they're also used in puzzles.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's very versatile. You know, you're not kind of, I feel like in some games we discussed, there's some sort of prehensile features which aren't utilized as much as they could be.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think everything in this game really fits together really well.
And this game doesn't give you, it doesn't overwhelm you with mechanics.
No.
You know what I mean? Like there's kinesis, there's stasis, you have your weapons and you're chopping people up.
Yes.
That's about it.
One other thing is I mentioned the zero G sections, you can sort of jump to any surface, and you have, your refillable like air meter that you have to keep an eye on. You can kind of little stocks here and there to fill up. But I like that. I hadn't seen that in any game where you're jumping from one surface to another, in a, you know, that kind of way. So here's an interesting prompt. What were the scariest enemies or moments for you?
Oh my God. It's got to be when you get locked in a quarantine room, right? And you have to wait it out.
Yeah.
You remember there were, I think, two or three moments like that?
Yeah.
Those are unbelievable. I mean, oh my God. There's also that enemy that creates other enemies and they can do it to you. Did you ever experience that? If you get a game over with a certain enemy, you become a necromorph.
Oh, really?
Wow.
It makes sense because sometimes you get chopped up into little pieces. But I mean, there's, I think, a couple different death animations.
Yeah. Well, if you're talking like scariest, it's got to be your first quarantine zone where all these enemies are just coming out of grates. You hear them in the ceiling and
yeah.
Oh, my God.
And that's a very like Aliens kind of inspired thing. The slashers are kind of like the main necromorph enemy. There's also the lurkers, which are the babies.
Yeah.
And they're like, I was like, I've never seen that before. Like a demon, like baby zombie that's like crawling along. And
there are some necromorphs where they punish you for hitting them in the chest because babies come out of them.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The infectors, which are like the bats.
Yep, yep.
Those are scary. The leapers are kind of like the scorpion ones.
Mm-hmm.
The guardians, which are the wall guys, you remember those?
Yeah.
They're very kind of disturbing looking. They're just like people growing out of the wall. They have like they send little ones after you. And the twitchers, which are the stasis ones, like they're kind of like they have stasis modules themselves.
Yes.
Pretty cool looking and a lot of fun to fight. So they keep you on your toes.
You think there was enough enemy variety, or do you think it kind of ran its course? I think in this game,
I think it was,
just enough, right?
It kept me going.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wanted to mention, I mix it up. I thought it was in one of the other games. It's in this game, the regenerating one that you have to freeze.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Keep cutting apart. That was a very tense encounter.
Really cool boss battle there too.
Yeah. So I'm going to get into the story and characters here. The ship you arrive on, the Kalyan, is badly damaged and before long destroyed, and the necromorphs massacre most of your crew. So it is mainly you, Isaac. The only other survivors are Kendra Daniels, who is the computer specialist, and Zach Hammond, who is the chief security officer, who you stay in contact with throughout the story. It's a pretty, you know, standard like horror setup.
Yeah, sparse crew.
Right. Isaac's girlfriend Nicole also provides support via sporadic messages and appearances. And you wind up learning more about most of the other characters through audio logs.
Yep.
So basically what happened here is that the ship's captain, Benjamin Mathias is the captain. He is a covert agent for what is called the Church of Unitology. And he was leading an expedition to recover the marker, as I mentioned earlier. So Unitology is sort of these people who have been, I guess, corrupted by the marker. It's kind of like the ring, I guess, in Lord of the Rings. And, mm-hmm. and they are, you know, all kind of trying. They covet it and, you know, are trying to do its bidding.
Yeah,
I guess. So the marker led the crew to behave erratically. It caused mass hysteria and paranoia. They all started killing each other. Eventually gave in to, you know, there's some characters committed suicide, etc. There is only there's one of the surviving crew is Dr. Kine, interesting character, who convinces Isaac that the only way to stop the outbreak is to return the marker to the surface and lull the old one back to sleep, if you'll pardon my comparison. Because there's the hive mind is on the surface of the planet. They awoke it by cracking it and looking for... You eventually find out that this planet was Operation was illegal because it was declared off limits by the government.
Yep. And because
they were doing experiments with it.
Yep.
And they were, you know, so basically there was a little cover up story that they were, you know, so this crew kind of stumbles into it. Some of the members were Unitologists themselves, and of course led to disaster. Something I thought was kind of interesting was, what did you think of your two other characters that you were playing around with? Like, so we're going to get into some trust issues here. What did you think of them?
Well, I think it's hard because I think it's implied over the course of the game that you're being influenced by the marker, both of the characters are. So I think their paranoia is coming from that.
Yeah.
I feel like, but it's not really told to you. You kind of have to figure that out.
Yeah.
So I think when I first played it, I don't want to use the word land. I wasn't quite understanding that there's something else going on.
Yeah.
The communication breakdown I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe you ever interact physically with the two other characters in your crew. You're separated by glass or door the entire game.
I think you may be correct. Like after that opening.
Yeah.
I don't
think you ever interact with them.
No. So that's a good way of, because you know you're always tempted to like hit people, like melee people, or shoot people and see what how they're gonna react. Mm-hmm. So it's a good way to like keep that out of your hands, I guess. So for me, I was maybe a little bit more mistrustful of Hammond.
Yeah.
So I thought that was like a great misdirect because he winds up just like halfway through the game getting like eviscerated.
Yep. I remember this.
by some monsters and cut him up. And it winds up this Dr. Kine character who tells you what's really going on, essentially. He is murdered by Daniels, the girl. And I was like, that, like, to me, like, totally blindsided me.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty successful.
Kine, was he the guy who, like, gave up Unitology? Was it him?
Yeah, or he came to his senses or something was trying to help you.
Yep.
And so basically she reveals herself to be a government employee who is tasked with recovering the marker on the surface.
Oh, boy.
Which it turns out to be the red marker.
Yep.
So the red marker is just a copy of the original. And it was created by an experiment, like a mind control, maybe experiment by Earth. And I thought that was a really good twist where it's like you're kind of sequel baiting, but it makes perfect sense. Like how that you know, you discover this immensely powerful object and it's, you know, it's of course, it's just a copy. I think that was a pretty good twist. The markers, as it turns out, they send out a signal that reanimates dead tissue and transforms them into various forms of necromorphs. And it's you keep hearing that phrase, make us whole. And it's basically sort of, I guess like a good comparison would be like a Halo Flood thing where they're trying to like merge all this dead tissue.
They do such a good job with like really with like visceral metaphors, make us whole. You're chopping people apart the whole game.
Yes. Yeah.
It just feels gross. Something you sparked my memory a little. You asked me what the scariest moment was. You know what it was for me? Do you remember the moment when you sort of you go into this room that's lit by candles?
Yeah.
And everybody has like their faces blindfolded and they all killed themselves.
Yes.
And I think Twinkle Twinkle Little Star is playing.
Yep.
I'm like, dude, holy fuck.
Some effective imagery there.
Oh, yeah. I think, good Lord.
So
effective religious villainry, I think, in this.
Yes, for sure. I kept mixing them up with the Unitarians. Big apology to the Unitarians there. You want to talk about the big twist to the end of the game, where Daniels essentially reveals that Nicole committed suicide before you even got there.
Yeah.
And Isaac has been hallucinating her the whole time.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a, what's the word for this, an unreliable narrator?
Yeah, because the marker is messing with your head.
Yeah, so it's one of these where you think you're hearing messages from Nicole, or you think you're listening to audio logs from her, or something like that is going. You're essentially a subplot to this game is you're trying to find her.
Yes, well, she is like appearing physically.
Yes.
Too.
Yeah, exactly.
So is I mean, so it's not like the most original twist in the world, but it still worked well for me.
I think the reason why it works well is you're given these hints that the marker is messing with people's brains, or it's messing with your perception of the world.
Yes.
Oh, of course Nicole is dead. Yeah. Right? But because Isaac doesn't talk, he's never like, oh, I miss her. I can't wait to find her. He doesn't say anything.
Of course.
So it's almost like it's very in the back of your mind that could be happening or not at all.
They're not tipping their hand too much.
Because it's almost genius that he doesn't say anything.
Right. It works really well. Mm-hmm. And that you want to talk about, do you know that Easter egg?
Oh.
Pretty brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. I love this. So this game is split up into chapters.
Yeah.
And the first letter of every chapter spells out Nicole is dead.
Pretty genius.
Ooh,
huh?
Ooh, like, uh-oh.
What do you think anyone, like, I mean, I didn't figure it out before then, but do you think anyone was like reading the chapters?
No, there's no way. Like, I think the only way to do that is if you saw them written out.
Right.
You only see them one at a time.
Got it. You got to have that real, like, pattern-oriented, sinuous sacrifice brain looking for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, 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 yeah,
well,
yeah.
Well, that's kind of like, you haven't watched Breaking Bad, right?
I've never seen the whole thing in its entirety.
Yeah, there's one season where the episode titles spell out, like, what's going to happen in the season finale. Mm-hmm. Pretty genius stuff. So, yeah, you essentially, I do like that, because this game is pretty much entirely set on the Ishimura, except for the last level.
It's very contained.
Very contained. And I do like it when you have one little bit at the end of a game that's set somewhere else, just to give you some contrast.
Sure. I mean, a favorite game we have on the show is the remake of Resident Evil 1, right? Most of the game is in the house.
Sure.
Right? There's only tiny moments where you're not. This game is similar.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was going to say, even we talked about Vampire, how the most of the game is in the city, and then you have a little epilogue
ending,
in the country.
The ending is somewhere else. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what did you think of the ending overall?
Okay, so I think... this game, like, no horror game lasts forever.
Right.
Like, at some point it becomes an action game, and this game does that a little. I don't think it's egregious.
Yeah.
When you're essentially trying to bring trying to bring the marker back and destroy the hive mind, right?
Yeah.
It's really
yeah,
the
yeah.
game. When you have to kind of escort the marker on a cart and you're just kind of killing enemies, but the final boss, it's pretty epic.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's kind of one of these, okay, they're getting a little bit of their sort of their action movie out of the way, but it's very brief.
Yeah, it didn't offend me.
No, it didn't offend me. Do you know what I like about it? It's, I don't know if you ever do this. I feel like when I know I'm at the end of a horror game, I'm like, let's empty out the item box. Let's fucking go.
Sure.
Like, I'm ready to fucking unload.
Right.
I've been conservative the whole game. I always love that little moment where I'm like, this is it.
It's the time.
Pump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when it makes that clear, that's it. That's even better.
Sure.
For sure. So the one part that I mean, I get why they did it, but I don't really like is the actual very ending. Because you have kind of, I thought it was an appropriate tender moment where he is watching old videos of Nicole in the ship after he escapes. And we should mention that the hive mind is crushed by a piece of the planet that they cracked previously. And, Daniels is also crushed by it. So that's a fitting ending.
Yep.
But, Isaac is by himself on the ship. He's watching some old videos of his girlfriend. And there is like one last jump scare where she's like a ghost or whatever.
And she jumps at him.
And I was like, I don't know. Because I felt like my personal take was you could have had like a sincere ending, and it's just kind of like
they kind of horror sequel bait you a little,
yeah,
right?
A little
you
bit.
Know what it is, it's so tiny where like it's okay. I mean, I were you looking for like a sensitive like ending where holy shit, he did it, this guy's been put through hell?
Well, it kind of to
kind
me
of like the Jill leaning kind of resting her head on Chris's shoulder in the helicopter.
Well,
sort of
it looked to me like it was clear. So you were hallucinating Nicole the whole time, and for me it appeared as though in watching those old videos he was kind of putting it to bed, like he was accepting her death.
Yeah.
And it just kind of like, so what's the purpose of that? It's just like one last little,
I think what they're trying to do is imply to you that his brain is still affected by the marker.
I think that's
what they were trying to do, but I would have been okay with him tiny watching
little,
the videos and it ending.
Yeah, a tiny little disagreement on an otherwise solid experience. So getting into final thoughts with this first one here, I wanted to ask you a twofold question.
Yeah.
So I initially, because there were so many games coming out back then, it was just sort of lost for me for a couple years that like, no, this game is actually incredibly good and worth playing. So I wanted to ask you, number one, what you think, besides what we've already talked about, what makes this a special experience, what makes it stand out, as well as there is a remake on the horizon. Do you think it needs one?
There's a remake on the Event Horizon?
Yes.
Right. So to speak. Okay. So what stands out about the first one? We have to go back to that time.
Yeah.
And I think what stands out to me is if we go back to 08, what is the landmark action game of that time? It's still Resident Evil 4.
Okay.
That game is still the balls. You know what I mean? That is the best third-person over-the-shoulder game there is. And this company or this director went out of his way to say there are some flaws in Resident Evil 4. We're going to be able to move and shoot at the same time, but essentially almost make the same game.
Well, that's what I liked about... you know, he obviously has a ton of respect for the game. He talked a lot about the Silent Hills as well.
Yeah.
But he said that he acknowledged that he would like to move and shoot at the same time, and he also didn't like the melee in Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, I think the coolest part about Dead Space, you know, you and I always complain that Resident Evil teeters too frequently into silly and stupid.
Yes.
Dead Space is really fucking serious.
Like the entire time.
And here's the thing, Dead Space is really fucking serious, and it's Resident Evil 4 mechanics.
Yeah.
It's sure, I think Dead Space is perhaps... perhaps it's a little bit less iconic maybe than Resident Evil 4 because Resident Evil 4 is just inherently so quirky.
Yeah.
But what I love about Dead Space is what they did not only to improve upon the Resident Evil 4 combat, how the entire presentation is diegetic.
Yes.
Which I've never seen, which is unbelievable.
It's very rare.
To answer your question about the remake, it's not necessary.
Yeah.
This game was released in full HD. It looks amazing.
I revisited it very recently. I thought it held up perfectly well.
And like, I feel like you're kind of encroaching on that era 08-09 where you don't need to remake those.
Yeah.
Like they're already awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to play it? Yeah. Because I mean the game rules.
Yeah.
The reason why maybe I am not as pumped to play it is I 100%ed this game. I played it on impossible mode. Like I've done everything there is to do.
The only thing I heard about this remake is that we're going to get into this shortly, but the other two games handle zero gravity differently, where you can float around instead of jumping.
Sure.
So they're going to do that for this remake.
I mean, I just think this remake might be EA trying to get into people's good graces again.
I think that's it, and I think it is an attempt to soft reboot the franchise.
Sure.
I'm not familiar with the team who's working on it. I wish them the best. I feel like that will wind up as like a YouTube exclusive, maybe you and I are talking about or something.
Did you want to do are we going to do grades, or do you want to move on? Do you want to do grades at the end for all three?
Why don't we grade them one at a time?
Okay,
while
sure.
Fresh. So you start.
I think this game it's got to be an A or A minus, right? Mm-hmm. Would this game be an A? I think I'm going to go, it's probably A minus, because there are some clunky puzzle solvy moments towards the end that it doesn't really hold up like the beginning. It kind of detracts from the game.
Yeah.
Besides that, I mean, the game is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't think it's quite perfect, especially when you... Oh, sure, like the setting and the story is, I'm not going to call it derivative, but you know, there's not a ton going on here. It's fine.
Yeah.
I got to say A minus. I don't know about you.
I'm giving it a 9.
It's
9 out of 10. I think that, not to get too long-winded here, but I think it is just, it felt very kind of, it was almost a Titanfall thing, or it was like almost swept under the rug. Like it enjoyed success at the time.
Yeah.
But I feel like not as many people talk about it as you would think or hope.
Yeah. I mean, that almost makes me want to give it an A+, where I'm like, I almost want to give it a bonus because it's so much better than so many other things I've played.
Yeah.
It's
and
awesome.
I mean, for us, I mean, for me personally, a 9 is very rare.
Yeah, for me, an A, I don't give them
not out, 9 so. And 10. It's like, so this game, I think the only thing that would have made it as a 10 is if it was some kind of like consciousness altering experience, you know, like something that really like reinvents the wheel. So this is for a game that doesn't do that. That's like a very high mark for me.
This is really, it's some of the best you can get in terms of third person horror.
I mean, horror in general games, like this
of
is,
course.
You know, they didn't fuck it. You
no,
know what I mean?
No,
like
there's
so many
shit.
Moments in the games we talk about, Silent Hill 3, all the Resident Evil nonsense.
Yeah.
They don't, in this game, they don't fuck it up.
No, they don't.
So I'm giving it that. Let's move on to Dead Space 2.
Yeah, let's talk about 2. Go ahead.
So this game released in 2011 by the original team, 3 years after the original Dead Space. It takes place on the Sprawl, which is a space station built into Saturn's moon Titan. After Dead Space 1, Isaac is left mentally disturbed and now has an imprint of the marker's designs in his mind, which I like that idea.
I think that's why the ending of the first one is not wholesome.
Yeah, right. I know. I just, for my, because I, spoiler alert, I don't like these sequels as much as the first one.
I don't, I'm glad we agree with this off the bat, because I don't either.
Yeah, so, but I just want to clarify that I kind of wish it was more self-contained and then I could almost ignore these.
Yeah.
So, long story short, so that guy we talked about, Glenn Schofield, he departed, left in the hands of people who worked on, other people who worked on the first one. Mm-hmm. So basically, you're Isaac again. Earth's government is torturing him on this facility for information so they can replicate the marker again.
Yep.
So EA Redwood Shores, as I mentioned, was restructured into Visceral Games. And I thought an interesting tidbit here was that production ran parallel to our favorite God of War ripoff called Dante's Inferno. So I didn't know Visceral worked on that as well.
No, I don't hate that game, actually.
I don't hate it. I think it kind of loses steam over time, but it was interesting that they did it as well.
Interesting. When EA used to make games, but go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So this one, Isaac speaks in this one, notably.
Yeah.
I don't dislike his voice acting.
No, I think it was actually a pleasant surprise about this game is I liked him as a silent protagonist. I think it worked out just fine.
Correct me if I'm wrong. He has like one line at the end of the first one.
I don't know. I should probably know this.
And I think it's the same guy who voices him in 2 and 3. Okay. But I he wasn't like offensively bland.
No,
you know what I
think
mean?
It's just fine.
Yeah, exactly. So I have some downers here.
I do too. Go ahead.
In terms of mechanics and features that were added, not many when it comes to innovation here. Stop me if you've heard this one before. The sequel was designed to be more action-oriented to appeal to a larger audience.
So are we talking about gameplay right off the bat here?
Yeah, are we talking Dead Space or Mass Effect here? What's going on?
I have two qualms with this game gameplay-wise really right off the bat.
Let's
here.
Go.
So my friends really combat me about this opinion. I don't like Dead Space 2 very much. Like, people might think I love this franchise. I really only love the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the second one. It's a good game. What bothers me, I don't know if you picked up on this when you played it, there are a lot of one-hit death opportunities in the game, and it took me out of the game totally.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, oh, there's another sliding sequence where I have to shoot. Oh, I die. Oh, there's a thing in the hallway that blows me up. Oh.
That bothers me, and it's kind of one of those things I talked about in Elden Ring, even, where you get grabbed and it's an instant kill. It's like, I don't want to look at a loading screen
I kept trying to tell my friends this, and it was not landing. Perhaps it will land with you.
Right.
And our audience. What bothered me about Dead Space 2 is if I'm playing a horror game, I'm playing really hard to get my character out of this situation.
Yeah.
And if I am just one hit killed over and over, I don't care anymore. Like, I just want to get through this. Like,
It
turns into a slog. And I think a lot of emphasis was put on making weapons and attachments and customization more varied.
Yeah.
And I didn't need that.
Like I said, I stuck with the plasma cutter in the first game. I think it was, for the second one, you do have to iterate, or else it's just a rerun, you know? So I do appreciate that there are a couple of different, we're going to get into like a couple of the additions. But before we get too far, another stop me if you heard this one before, the sequel has a multiplayer mode that nobody played.
I forgot that.
And it's like, why? So basically, it's essentially Left 4 Dead.
Yeah.
Where you have some survivors on one side and the other ones play as the Necromorphs.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, was that a good use of resources?
Probably. I mean, well, here's the thing, though. I do want this. We'll eventually do a video on like Greg's theory of the games that ruin games.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, like, we're in the era. This is 2011.
Yeah.
Where Call of Duty has dominated the landscape.
Of course.
And every game now has multiplayer because of, you know, Call of Duty 4 and all that success.
Yeah.
And I think Dead Space 1 just came out too soon after to be affected by that.
Yeah, of course.
But now that every game has to have multiplayer, this game does too.
But I was so my main comparison there. Was we just talked about Bioshock 2, which also included that. That was 2009.
Yep.
And a year after this was Mass Effect 3, which also had multiplayer where they didn't want.
We're getting to the bad era of games here.
This is, dude, I'm telling you, this last decade was a rough one.
I mean, especially
looking
from
back
like
on
11
it,
to 15, right?
Yeah.
It was rough.
So before we get too far here, I mentioned the floating around in Zero G. I didn't dislike it. I didn't like it. You know, I kind of like them both in different ways, like the either the leaping or the floating. Mm-hmm. Some of the new weapons, the only ones that I there's, because there's a bunch, but the only ones that I distinctly remember and one that I wanted to talk about, the javelin gun is a it's a classic like spear gun.
That's the balls. I love that.
You can't beat that in any game where you can pin an enemy to the wall.
Awesome. Sure. I mean. That's the weapon that I feel like I recall the most from Dead Space 2 is just one hit pinning people to wall. It's awesome.
And it's a little weird in Halo, which is not super violent. You have that big rifle that did it. But in this game where it is extremely gruesome, it feels very, very appropriate. The force gun, which is basically a shotgun.
Yeah.
And I liked that inclusion in a kind of zombie-ish horror environment. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a pretty good one.
And they didn't have one in the first game.
Exactly. So. And lastly, but certainly not leastly, there is a secret weapon called the hand cannon, and it's just a foam finger. And it's just like instant kills.
It's awesome.
So there's a ton of new enemies, but the only ones I really want to talk about are the two that frustrated me the most.
Oh, I know what you're going to say. We probably agree. Go ahead.
So number one is the pack, which is the children.
Yeah,
that mob you. I'm going to get into a very unpleasant thing later about them.
Yep.
And the stalker, which is the like velociraptor that like headbutts you. You're familiar with this?
This is where I think I distinctly remember saying, I don't think I like this game that much. Is I think you're in a section where stalkers are
surrounding you.
They're either coming at you from various walls and you have to stasis them.
Yes.
I'm like, this game just got kind of silly. And like, I don't
So I appreciate that it's a different type of encounter that you can't just do the normal chop chop thing, but it just that was a situation where they can one shot kill you.
It's really annoying,
and there's a ton of them.
And I almost The Last of Us 2 did this a little bit better, where there is a stalker enemy. It doesn't do anything different other than it's smarter than others, where it's going to look around corners, it's going to see where you are.
Yeah.
That's scary to me, where they're more knowledgeable.
I think that's maybe a underrated aspect of games in general is AI.
Yeah,
is like investing in your AI, because that's great.
And it's just, what I remember about stalkers is like they come around the corner, you have to stasis them, it becomes tedious and annoying, and I don't like it.
So, with that in mind, let's just skim through the story here.
Yeah,
super quick.
Go ahead.
Something I did like about the opening here is that you watch a person turn into a necromorph for the first time.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of, it was like a character that appears very briefly, helps you out, and he gets turned into one.
Yeah.
And I thought that was awesome. Ultimately, I feel like overall this is a sort of a stock plot that just kind of recycles and reconfigures elements of the first game. That's why I didn't like it as much. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the Ishimura, but it's bigger because it's a space station.
Yeah.
And not that it doesn't have, you know, kind of its own quirks and stuff, but I felt like it was like playing the hits, you know?
Do you know what I think this game does better than other games I've played, this franchise?
Yeah.
The running sequences where you're defenseless.
Yeah.
Like, was to the straitjacket sequence?
Yes.
In the beginning. I thought this was pretty effective.
I do like that, yeah.
I like it where you're like, clearly there's a bunch of chaos going on, I'm just running through it.
Get me the fuck out of there.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, I should back up a little. I'm not going to tell our audience that I think this is a bad game.
No, like I don't. Definitely not.
It's definitely a good game, but I've had many of my friends tell me that 2 is better than 1, and I definitely think they are not correct.
Yeah, so I have a I don't want to disrespect this game too much. I know there's a lot of fans, there's some people, some critics who even thought it was better. I have a friend who has a Dead Space 2 tattoo, which is like, that's some supreme enjoyment. Good for you. I personally don't like it as much as the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get into a quick a few story highlights here. Very beginning of this game, you are betrayed by the lady again. I thought it was like, I was like, wait, you're doing this again? You just did this.
Yep.
Like it's in like the first act of the game.
Yep.
And you kind of run through a series of, to me, unmemorable characters who like, oh, I gotta help you, and then they die. Like very in quick succession.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't love that about this, where it's, you can't really develop any, you're kind of running through these. And that's kind of a horror formula in and of itself. I didn't really like it personally. Some character growth here where you become attached to the character Ellie. Speaking of Last of Us, she is a government employee. Who, again,
yeah.
But you know, that's growth, where he's learning to trust and you know, get over this, you know, hangups, and he winds up sending her away on a shuttle so she doesn't meet Nicole's fate.
Sure.
So that's some a little growth for Isaac here. I wanted to ask your feelings about the infamous eyeball sequence.
Oh, I was like, I literally was scanning, like, in my brain. I was like, have we talked about that yet?
Right.
We haven't. I mean, this is awesome, right?
Yes. I
mean,
I like this a lot.
So this is it's kind of a puzzle, kind of a quick time event.
Yes.
Where you have to, you have to
extract, like, the image of the marker from your eye, right? Yeah.
You essentially are trying to put a needle in your own eye as a quick time event. Oh, and it's like, it's very jittery and very shaky.
Well, yes. Yeah. So basically it is like that. I think there is a surgery machine that does this where it puts it right in the center of your eye.
Yep.
And it somehow doesn't, like, permanently damage it, I guess. Yep. It's very thin. So that is what you're trying to do, but I think the equipment is broken.
Or you have to do it yourself.
So yes. So you have to, it's very near the end of the game, and you have to do it. And if you fuck it up, it is one of the most violent things I've ever seen in a video game.
It's one of those scenes where I'm a little surprised it got through ratings.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, if you screw it up, you essentially obliterate your face and your eyes, and it's a bunch of screaming.
Goes right in your brain, and it's
like, oh my God.
It's very violent.
Yeah.
But it is. I call
iconic,
it a success.
Right? That's got to be iconic to this franchise.
When it came out, when this game came out, I remember that GIF going around everywhere. It was like horrifying. But lastly, I just wanted to mention that thing with the pack, the children. Yeah. The final, you have sort of you've been hallucinating Nicole, like, the whole time. She's kind of haunting you now. And there is a final boss battle with the hallucinations, and it is a fucking grind.
Oh,
is a ton of, like, one-hit death.
It's terrible.
I hated it so
much. I couldn't
stand
this.
I was so relieved.
All I remember is just all the babies jumping on you and you die. Like,
yes.
So, okay, whatever.
So I didn't like that at all.
I didn't either. I hope we're in consensus here with the audience. Like, I hope so.
You know, I apologize if you like this game. For all we've said here. So I'm going to ask you an interesting prompt. How would you have handled a sequel instead if you had to make one to Dead Space?
Wow, I didn't think you would ask me this. How would I handle a sequel? Wow, that's so hard. Because I'm trying to think of, like, what Dead Space 2 was like, kind of a retread with increased combat mechanics.
So let me kind of share my
first
thought. I think maybe Isaac shouldn't have been the main character at all.
Oh, you think this should have been happening somewhere else
to someone else? Because, you know, he's already lived it, and it's kind of, you know, like, all right, well, this guy's he's kind of proved himself a little bit, you know, maybe put someone a little more vulnerable.
Let me get
in
into
position.
Your brain here. You ready?
Yeah.
That would have almost set up the co-op in 3 better. Right, where you have two different characters, first game, second game.
Oh, yeah.
See,
good point.
No, I'm kind of right. I like that.
Well, you kind of almost have a Master Chief Arbiter thing.
Yeah,
going on.
Sort of.
Yeah.
I mean, well, then again, the same thing with every horror game. It should have just been one game.
Of course.
It shouldn't have made it
at all. Well, it's like you look at horror. I just watched all the Halloween movies for the first time.
Sure.
You look at any horror franchise, the first one, maybe two, are usually the best.
Yeah,
like occasionally you get some, oh, they kind of brought it back a little bit, but usually the first one is because it's the same monster or whatever isn't as scary.
Or
second
I mean
time.
Do you do the thing where you go the ironic angle where the marker is brought back to Earth and it's done during the day outside? It's something way different.
Yeah, anything.
Right?
Anything that wasn't just, I'm trapped in space again,
yeah,
but bigger.
They essentially just do it again. But.
So what grade would you give this one?
That's hard. I don't really know. You know what it is? I'm trying to, like, separate my personal dislike for their choices, and it's a good production.
Yeah.
Like, that's hard, I think, to maybe separate in my critique of this game. It's a good production.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good video game. I think there are just design choices that, to me, make it very inferior to the first one.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think this is, like a B-? Like a 7.5, B minus.
So I'm going with a what I would call a slight pass, which would be a 6 out of 10 versus the original's 9.
Sure.
I just have no desire to replay this. I found it frequently frustrating and unpleasant. So no offense to the people who worked on it, but that
am I higher than you on this? I think so.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, I'm trying to be fair, but that was my personal take. Let's move on.
Yeah, sure.
Into Dead Space 3. So this was released in 2013 by EA and Visceral again.
Yep.
Set 3 years after Dead Space 2. Isaac and Ellie have a brief romantic relationship off camera between games.
Okay.
So I don't know how I feel about that being necessarily kind of shoveled off to the side, but they're already broken up by the time the game starts.
Okay.
So it's like, I don't know. The unitologists are, they're now launching terrorist attacks to activate dormant, or work in progress markers. So you have now, the secondary character, as you mentioned, or in literary terms, it would be a deuteragonist, instead of a protagonist, is John Carver. He's a very kind of generic looking marine guy, like space marine guy. I didn't find his character like obnoxious, but it was a little, we're going to get into the motives behind
of this game is, why is this here?
Right.
Like, why did this game get made?
So I would call his origin story borderline satirical.
Yeah.
Where his family were killed and turned into necromorphs and he had to kill them. And I'm like, come on. We've seen this like in zombie fiction a thousand times. Like, oh, yeah, my family, that kind of thing. So at the beginning of this game, Isaac is living by himself on the moon. He's in a little colony. And we're going to get into it. So the colony itself, I thought, was kind of fun and different to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think this is daylight where you kind of begin. He's living in this little apartment. And the main setting of this game is called Tau Volantis. It is a ice planet. And I loved the look of this planet.
Yeah.
Because it reminded me a lot of The Thing, mm-hmm. with a kind of similar horror. They're in Antarctica in that movie, that kind of vibe. This was planned as a horror game.
Oh.
But it is, at EA's behest, it is even more action-oriented than the previous one. Introduced a cover system, which is not completely unwelcome to me.
Nope.
I think it's always, if you're going to have action, it may as well play better,
Yeah, the one interjection I'm going to make before you continue,
yeah.
There are no co-op horror games, and this, I think, falls into that. Kind of a half joke I make.
Yeah.
It's a co-op game. It means inherently it's not going to be scary. Like,
You feel... for instance, I've gone to scary places by myself and with other people. It's obviously way scarier if you're by yourself.
Of course. I just think inherently when you have co-op, this is not a horror game anymore.
No.
Not really.
No. But I do have a caveat that we're going to get to later about the direction for this game. But in terms of mechanics additions to this, I wanted to bring up something terrible that I forgot about.
Okay.
So you have some of your classic Dead Space weapons, but now you can also craft the weapons like from parts.
Yeah.
Number one, I don't like a crafting system unless it's like we mentioned Vampire, serves a utility with NPCs and stuff like that, where I so often, apologies to anyone who enjoys them, but I hate them for the most part.
Yeah.
It feels very like micromanagey, and I hate looking at what can I make with a few rusty springs,
Well, you know what, dude? It makes this game too video gamey.
Right? Yes.
I'm taken out of it pretty quick.
But it gets worse.
Yep.
Because the parts, so you would create them at like workbenches.
Mm-hmm.
The parts can be purchased with real world money.
Oh, boy. It's an EA game.
2013.
You're surprised?
No, I'm
We're
not surprised.
We're in a rough era of video games.
But I forgot that
Well, also, Dead Space 3, a small tidbit. This I did not play this on release. I purposely waited
skipped
years.
It. Yeah. Something interesting that I did like, however, was that there are alternate modes which I would be interested in revisiting with lighter resources. And there is one that is permadeath.
Ooh.
So I'm like, you don't see that too often.
Well, it's not that different from impossible mode in the first one.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I guess if you die, you have to start at the very beginning of the campaign.
If it was a better game, I'd enjoy it.
Right. 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 and I, yeah, as you mentioned, the co-op experience, it's very new for this franchise. I personally found it very perfunctory, like just kind of half-hearted.
Yeah.
And I just felt that if you're going to have this story about, okay, you're wrapping up Isaac's story, like just do it, you know, preserve the atmosphere. It's just,
even if you did a retread, just do it.
Yeah. So I'm going to get into the story here, story and characters. I'm not sure how clearly you remember this, but there is a kind of intriguing prologue that is set 200 years in the past with different characters. And it is kind of just setting the stage on Tau Volantis about like this early expedition there to find some, you know, the whatever,
find the resonator,
etc. Like the codex, I believe it's called.
Yeah, yeah.
But what's in like so they and this is kind of an early markerish experience where they all kill themselves just to preserve the secret. I guess it's manipulating them to preserve.
I rolled my eyes, but this is an audio podcast.
No, but I mean, yeah. I think that's an interesting little side story.
Sure.
Like a marker is affecting like a whole expedition of people in a different way. I like the intro a lot with the escape from the city where they come after you. It's kind of different for the series. And you are rescued by this guy Carver and Ellie's new boyfriend, which I think is really funny because, like I said, their entire romance, because they flirt a little in the previous one, but it's sort of happens off screen, and so her boyfriend saves you, which is very funny, and I really enjoyed the first few chapters where you have to float around from one ship to another, in space.
Mm-hmm.
It felt to me kind of like what they should have done in 2, where you have sort of an expanded twist on the original, but you are going through not just one big thing, but some smaller separated ships.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was pretty cool. The Planet of Ice, as I mentioned, very awesome as a setting. And I liked that when you first crash land there, you have to fight off hypothermia.
Yeah.
Like you have to find like a burning piece of ship or something to huddle around. I'm like, that's something different where, cause they do emphasize a lot in the first one, how against the elements you are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in space, like it's crazy that a human being would be in space.
Sure.
And it's nice to have something else, mm-hmm. you know, where that's taking precedent there. I did find something really funny when revisiting this was you keep hearing, instead of make us whole this time, there's a new phrase called turn it off. And I was thinking really funny, like so I'm maybe more positive on this game than most people, but I thought it was very funny that you are getting repeated messages to turn it off.
I mean, it's, you know what's so funny that you, I didn't realize how close an alignment you and I were on this whole franchise.
Yeah.
We try to, you know, keep our conversations as natural as possible when we're on mic here. So, me as well, where, you know, I do think Dead Space 2 and 3 are much lesser than the first one, but I actually don't think this game is like horrible. I think it's like, you know, meh.
No. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to get into, I guess my final, thoughts on that later.
Yeah, but, of course.
So turn it off, I guess, is referring to this new markery piece of machinery that is keeping the planet frozen.
Yeah.
Because they had an outbreak or whatever of the necromorphs. And I like that premise like way more than the previous one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where it's adding to the lore. You find out there was another alien species that dealt with necromorphs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, so this is a little more interesting than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was literally just going to be the same thing over again. A quick interpersonal thing. A series of mishaps leads to Isaac shooting Ellie's boyfriend in the head. Where it's really funny because Isaac saves the boyfriend's life. I'm not even going to refer to him by name
because
he doesn't deserve it. And he gets really mad at you for some reason and tries to shoot you, and Isaac shoots him. It's right after he saved his life. It's kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, so this guy's a joke character. The final sort of set piece I really liked with the floating alien city, where you're kind of, so it's taking the zero G to kind of like new heights, I guess.
Yep.
It reminded me almost a little bit of, we talked about Titanfall recently, the end of that, where things are kind of breaking up.
Yep, and you're kind of trying to evacuate and you're jumping through space.
Yes, exactly. So I have a couple funny notes about the end of this.
Sure.
The machine keeping the planet frozen is deactivated by the bad guy, who's the head of the Unitologists, and it gets reactivated 2 seconds later by Isaac, which leads the evil moon full of yuckies to crash into this planet, and that's the how the conflict ends. So the moon is essentially, that's where all the necromorphs are living.
Yeah.
Because I think this was a good payoff. I didn't play the DLC for this.
Me either.
It sounds pretty stupid, but it is kind of just a continuation of the story, and it leads to like a big cliffhanger. And so what I think is great about this series as a whole, and is kind of scary about it coming back to life. That's the real horror,
right?
Is this franchise coming, because I so few times, like so many franchises we follow go on so fucking long, and they and to their detriment. Mm-hmm. And what I liked about the series for a while is that, you know, for better or worse, it was a trilogy, and it ended. And mm-hmm. It never really explained the central mystery of like who made the marker,
sure,
or the backstory. I thought that was a great sort of unanswered question there. But what was interesting to me was that the end result of the necromorph thing is the make us whole thing, is that moon thing, all the organisms sort of fused together, and the planet itself became an organism. So that was like, oh, that's kind of cool. That's a cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
And what you hear some rumors in this DLC called the Brotherhood of Moons. And it's like, so like this is happening across the galaxy, and they're all maybe converging further, and that's like their purpose. Kind of interesting thing to think about, if nothing else. So that's Dead Space 3. It's very like Isaac's fate is left very uncertain.
Yeah.
Carver's fate, Ellie survives, I believe. She gets sent off again because that's all she does. This game, I my big unpopular opinion is that I like it more than 2. Because it does its own thing. It doesn't rehash it. Like, you, at least you get new stuff to look at. I think the ice planet looks very cool. Like in the, you know, when you have a sunset, everything has like an orange glow off the ice and stuff. I love the setting. I had a lot of fun playing it. I don't care about the story at all. At least it has some thought provoking elements. Ultimately for me, this one is a 7 where the previous one would be a 6.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you feel.
Sure. Some quick fire points here. This game, I mean, it's interesting you say that. I don't hate this game either.
Yeah.
Like, I think this game actually got dumped on way... It's interesting. I think Dead Space 2 got way too much praise, and I think Dead Space 3 got way too much hate.
That's how I feel.
Yeah, where Dead Space 3, some quickfire stuff that bothered me.
Yeah.
You have combat scenarios where you're shooting humans. Like, it's like a cover shooter.
Yeah.
Don't like any of that.
Yeah, yeah.
This game becomes a little bit of a checklist because there are side missions and side quests to follow. There were a few of them.
Yes.
And I don't like that either.
Yeah.
Kind of takes... And it being a co-op game, there was no such thing as a co-op horror game,
right?
Like, in my opinion, don't like that either.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual gameplay is like fine.
Yeah,
like, the game itself. The reason why I did not play it was it got totally shit on, and
waited.
I didn't want to spend money on it. I'm not saying I was pleasantly surprised. I was almost relieved that it wasn't that bad.
Yes, yeah, totally. I think it's so funny because it's like I believe that the reaction at the time was warranted. Like, you're taking a horror franchise and turning it into an action franchise. That's not ideal. But in terms of what the team actually put together, under the circumstances, I think it came out reasonably well.
I think it's okay. I'm gonna like give it a grade,
mm-hmm.
like if I think the first one's an A-, second for me is like a B-, this mm-hmm. is like a C plus.
Yeah,
like C plus. It's all right.
Like, fine.
It's okay. Did you have anything else you want to wrap?
Yeah, last couple questions here for you. How do you ultimately feel about the complete story of Dead Space? And where do you think things will go after the remake is released?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't really have any feelings about the culmination of the story, right? Because it kind of is unfinished, right? It's kind of mysterious. They have some silly characters.
It's for the most part, like, the central conflict, I guess, is resolved, air quotes. Yeah. Uh-huh. But for me, I think the first Dead Space really, it does that Halo thing where it takes a very small slice of a bigger universe. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel like the other two lived up to my imagination of what the universe looked like. I thought there would be more going on. Mm-hmm. I think the third one added a little bit more than the second one. It's a very sort of like you had this complete ironclad vision for the first chapter. And then it's like, yeah, you're just kind of spinning your wheels, you know?
And the Dead Space 2 and 3 were also developed very fast.
Very fast, different people.
Are we talking about future of the franchise? That's a tough question, too.
So my question is basically like, so I'm assuming this remake is going to come out and it's going to sell like gangbusters.
Yeah, sure.
I think they're going to really market the shit out of it. And there's not like a ton of horror games coming out lately.
Yeah.
We're going to get our yearly Resident Evil, whatever.
Ugh.
But in terms of what I think is going to happen, I think it's going to be very successful. I think they're going to try to do Dead Space 4 after that happens.
Let me say this. There's no reason to remake the first one. I'm probably going to play it. I have some faith it'll be good because the bones of that game are already pretty perfect.
It might be like a sale purchase or a Game Pass thing for me, the remake.
It's already so perfect or so close as it is, I actually have a lot of confidence it'll be just fine.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm saying this. If it was made, I have some faith that Dead Space 4 will be fine. Like, we haven't seen it in how long? 10 years?
I think it will at least be horror focused.
And I don't have my faith in it is lower because of who's making it, but
yeah,
because it's EA.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's all. Well, here's where I think EA has to be careful. The past couple of years, there's been a lot of we love single player games again.
Right,
that's coming around again, where you need to make a really good single player game, and you cannot, you know, dagger people for microtransactions and multiplayer experiences. We don't like it. I don't know. I have some. I think I have like. And then again, my biggest flaw is like wishful thinking. Mm. So I have like a small hope that I think it'll be okay.
I will inevitably go in with, if they do it, I will inevitably go in with low expectations and be like, oh, that wasn't so bad.
It's all right. So you heard it here first, like on 4th of July, 2022.
Dead Space 4? It's all right.
It'll be all right. Is that it?
That's it for me.
Yeah.
You got anything else?
No, I think that's it. So anyway, Dead Space rocks. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Goddamn GameCube.